John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drop?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Staying on Gaza on Sunday, Israeli naval forces boarded the humanitarian aid ship, the SV Estella, that was en route to the Gaza Strip, bringing humanitarian aid supplies, including musical instruments and building materials. The SV Estella, which bears the flag of Finland, was guided into the Israeli port of Ashdod. The 30 passengers and crew, which include a former Canadian Parliament member and several former members of the Israeli military who have since renounced the Israeli occupation of Palestine, have all been taken into custody by the Israeli military. Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org. For Tuesday, October 22nd, 2012. The Prince of Qatar arrives in Gaza while Israel deports 9 solidarity activists kidnapped along with their ship by the army en route to the Gaza Strip. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. The Prince of Qatar, Hamad bin Khalifa, and his wife, Mu'azza bin Nasser, arrived in the Gaza Strip on Tuesday morning through the Rafah border terminal between the Gaza Strip and Egypt, marking the first visit of a senior Arab official since Israel imposed its siege on the Gaza Strip in 2006. The Prince and accompanying delegates was welcomed by Ismail Haniyeh, Prime Minister of the Hamas-led government in Gaza, and leaders of different factions, except for Fatah and leftist movements. Local sources said that the prince will remain in Gaza for one day and intends to hold meetings with Haniyeh and several ministers and members of the Legislative Council. Bin Khalifa first visited the Gaza Strip in 1999 and was welcomed by the late President Yasser Arafat. Bin Khalifa's visit today comes just one day after the Israeli bombardment targeting Gaza left 3 Palestinians dead and at least 8 others injured. In other news today, Israeli officials reported that the Israeli immigration authorities deported 9 solidarity activists who were on the Estella solidarity ship that was boarded by the Israeli Navy in international waters on Sunday. Zabina Haddad, spokesperson of the Israeli Immigration Authorities, told France Press that 9 activists, 5 from Greece, 3 from Spain and 1 Italian, voluntarily forfeited their rights to appeal a judge's decision for their deportation. The Israeli Navy boarded the ship, which is carrying aid supplies to the besieged Gaza Strip, and kidnapped 27 international peace activists and 3 Israeli activists who were aboard a Stella ship that was sailing under a Finnish flag. Haddad said that 18 activists are still detained in an Israeli detention facility in Ramla and are awaiting a judge order regarding their deportation, and added that such decision could be made by Wednesday. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Tuesday, October 22nd news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hassam Kassis and me, Ghassan Barnoura.
Afghanistan, 21st of October. An Australian soldier was killed by an IED blast somewhere in Uzgan province. Afghanistan, 20th of October. Rockets hit and burned a warehouse near the U.S. military base in the Bagram district of Central Parwan province. Afghanistan, 20th of October. A man in a police uniform shot and killed 3 cops at a police checkpoint in Khost province. This is yet another in a long line of so-called green and blue attacks, except that this one targeted the U.S.-supported Afghan police instead of the U.S. troops themselves. Afghanistan, 23rd of October. At least 10 police officers and soldiers of unreported nationality were killed when Taliban fighters ambushed a police convoy in Herat province. Only 3 of the attackers were killed. Afghanistan, 23rd of October. A tank belonging to unspecified NATO forces was destroyed by a bomb attack on a military convoy in Mitterlam district of the eastern province of Lagman on Tuesday. Nobody has admitted to the casualties, but witnesses reported helicopters airlifting the wounded to treatment. You really don't want to be inside a tank that is blown up. Afghanistan, 19th of October. A roadside bomb hit a minibus going to a wedding in northern Afghanistan. 15 people were killed and 18 were wounded. Mr. Barack Obama, this just keeps going on and on. Nothing ever changes in the Afghan war. Now is the time to throw in the towel, bring all the troops home today.
University of Notre Dame international law professor Mary Ellen O'Connell is waging a lonely battle, charging U.S. drone strikes in Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia violate accepted standards of the rule of law. Since taking office, President Barack Obama has authorized 284 drone strikes in Pakistan. The New America Foundation, a think tank in Washington, D.C., states 3,000 people to date have been killed by U.S. drone attacks. O'Connell's legal arguments are complex and confusing to a public not versed in the rules of combat and international law. Her academic work won important backing from a joint report of New York University and Stanford University law schools, which concluded many U.S. drone strikes were illegal since they occurred outside the traditional limits of a war zone. In an interview with the Los Angeles Times, O'Connell observed, "We would not accept or want a world in which Russia or China or Iran is claiming authority to kill alleged enemies of the state based on secret evidence of the executive branch alone." In June, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Killings warned a conference in Geneva that double-tap drone strikes, where a second drone-based missile attack is launched after people arrive to offer aid to the wounded, could be interpreted as a war crime. In defending the policy of targeted killings, White House counterterrorism advisor John Brennan maintains, "We use force consistent with our inherent right to self-defense."
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, Send an email to WSQTradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTradio@hushmail.com. On the 19th of October, Leah Lynn Plant, held in jail by a Seattle grand jury for 4 hellish days for refusing to snitch, was released. 2 other grand jury resistors, Matthew Kyle Duran and Catherine Oljenik, are still being held, again for refusing to snitch on Occupy activists and or anarchists in Seattle or Portland. 2 days earlier, on the 17th of October, anarchists sabotaged 3 sets of railroad tracks outside New York City in the latest of a long line of punitive strikes against corporate capitalism in retaliation for the grand jury. They released this communique, obviously before Leah Lynn Plant was released. To our comrades enduring repression in the Northeast, you are not alone. In the early morning hours of October 17th, we sabotaged the operation of 3 sets of train tracks leading in and out of New York City. This action was undertaken in solidarity with Leah Lynn Plant, Matthew Kyle Duran, Catherine Oljenik, and all of the other comrades in the Northwest. To those who are staying strong in these trying times, may this action be an expression of our deepest love. To those who seek to put them in cages, may this action be an expression of our deepest hatred. Death to capital, death to the state, long live anarchy, New York anarchists. On Friday, the 19th of October, the same day Leah Lynn Plant was released, protesters showed up in Bloomington, Indiana in cold rain, demanding both an end to the grand jury violence in Seattle and an end to police repression of the homeless who have been subject to police harassment and violence in Bloomington. To the grand jury and to all the police who use violence against the homeless, remember this. Don't mess with people, don't mess with Occupy, and don't mess with anarchists. Because the night belongs to us. Because the night belongs to lovers.
Because the night belongs to us. Because billionaire brothers David and Charles Koch had become well known in recent years for their financial support for right-wing political causes and their very public personal commitment to defeat President Barack Obama in the 2012 election. Heirs to the oil fortune left by their father, Fred, founder of Koch Industries, David and Charles have over the past 9 years sponsored private retreats where wealthy conservative donors, Republican politicians, and right-wing activists gather to discuss politics and pledge funds for the cause. Last winter, at a 3-day retreat in California, the Kochs and more than 250 of their allies pledged approximately $100 million to defeat President Obama in the 2012 election. A source who was at the retreat reported that Charles had personally pledged $40 million and David pledged $20 million to beat Obama at the polls this November. More recently, In These Times magazine reported that Koch Industries sent voter information packets to 45,000 employees and contractors working for their Georgia Pacific subsidiary endorsing Mitt Romney, while warning that many of our more than 50,000 U.S. employees and contractors may suffer the consequences if they vote for Obama and the Democrats. Your reporter spoke with Jesse Lava, campaign director with Brave New Foundation, who oversaw the investigation that was the basis for Robert Greenwald's newest documentary film, Koch Brothers Exposed. The film examines the Koch brothers' involvement in polluting industries and the effects on downwind communities, efforts to resegregate public schools, the undermining of Social Security, and the imposition of new laws designed to suppress voter participation. Here, Jesse Lava explains why he believes it's important for Americans to know about the financial power behind the Koch brothers' radical conservative political agenda.
These are two guys who have $62 billion between them, and they use that wealth to keep down what has been metaphorically termed the 99%, or say symbolically termed the 99%, and they do it in a lot of ways. One key way is they use their wealth to create an echo chamber of misinformation. So let's take one issue as an example, Social Security. They've given millions upon millions of dollars to all kinds of think tanks, the Mercatus Center, Cato Institute, Heritage Foundation, and these think tanks put out papers saying that Social Security is going broke. How many times have all of your listeners heard that expression, Social Security is going broke, Social Security is going bankrupt? That's because the Koch brothers and people like them have paid a lot of money to make sure that that's the message you hear. They create this echo chamber fight by funding these groups to say this, even though it's not true. And then politicians hear that. They put that into bills. Media outlets such as Fox News, but also lots of regular mainstream outlets as well, will put that into their news stories and act as if it's true. Soon enough, you start hearing it so many times because you think, gee, we've got to start cutting Social Security if we want to save it. The reality is that Social Security has a $2.7 trillion surplus. And for decades, it is expected to remain solvent. The only thing that will make Social Security insolvent is if we cut it. So this argument that we need to destroy Social Security in order to save it is the kind of things that the Koch brothers do in the public discourse to achieve a minimal government and a pro-corporate agenda, where things like Social Security, which is an extremely popular program, they don't want those kinds of examples of successful social programs being in existence. That's why they want to dismantle Social Security.
Now, Jesse, I wanted to ask you about something that was in the news just in the last couple of days. It turns out Koch Industries on October 1st sent voter information packets to 45,000 employees of its Georgia-Pacific subsidiary, saying to the employees and their contractors that they may suffer the consequences of voting for President Obama and Democrats. This is maybe done by some employers at some time through U.S. history and elections, but certainly this is an outlier in terms of the way employers behave, when it comes to an employee's personal choice and who they vote for in U.S. elections, is it not?
It absolutely is. I mean, certainly corporations have political action committees, and corporations get politically active. And they like to kind of hide behind that, say, hey, this is just free speech. The problem is that this is free speech with an imbalance of power. And in that very same article that came out in the magazine In These Times, we had somebody who had given a quote to The Nation magazine and who had said things against the Koch brothers and their politics and working for Koch Industries. And in this article, it revealed that he had been punished for that, that he had applied for a promotion to become a shop foreman in a Koch factory, and he was denied the ability to do that because they said, you're too political. And I think he knew exactly what that meant. He had given this quote to the Nation magazine. So it is a dangerous way to approach things, and it actually reflects the broader problem of unaccountable corporate power and the general problem of weak unions, of workers who cannot collectively bargain, of a situation in which workers are completely dependent on their employers, and employers can say, hey, we're just doing free speech, and it is de facto intimidation.
What's the objective of this film, in addition to alerting us to the activities and the predilections of the billionaire Koch brothers? Is this a call to action, and if so, for what?
Absolutely. We need to take our democracy back, and I know that sounds gauzy and you hear things like that all the time, but really there is something very profoundly important at stake. We're not supposed to be in a plutocracy. We are supposed to be in a democracy. The problem is that most people have no idea what the Koch brothers are doing. For the people who are listening, think about your cousins, your friends, your brothers, your coworkers. Most of them, maybe they've kind of sort of heard of the Koch brothers. Probably they haven't, or maybe they haven't. This has to get out there, because the way that people can fight to get their democracy back is if they know the mechanism by which it's being taken from them. And that's what the Koch brothers are doing. They're precisely trying to take our democracy from us. And with this film, we hope to inspire, educate, and agitate. We want people to show this to everyone they know. Go to KochBrothersExposed.com. You can get a DVD there. You can show. You can do screenings. You can sign up to do a screening where people in your area can come to it. Go and do that so that people understand how their democracy is evaporating. That's how we can get it back.
That was Jesse Lava, campaign director with Brave New Foundation and an investigator on the film Koch Brothers Exposed. Learn more about the film and the Koch brothers' political agenda by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
The 19th of October was the 100th anniversary of the founding of the United States Chamber of Commerce. On that day, an estimated 100 protesters marched against the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, protesting their role as a conduit for anonymous donations from corporations to corrupt elections throughout the United States. One of the key demands of the protest was that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce disclose the identities of all of its corporate donors, given that these corporations are using the chamber to hide from public scrutiny.
Happy disclosure to you! Happy disclosure to you! No more secret political donors! Happy disclosure to you! And stop fighting reform! And stop fighting reform! Democracy demands transparency! Stop fighting reform! More democracy for us! More democracy!
Is Tom going to come out and say a few words?
Is Tom available? Where's Tom?
Why do they care so much about opposing disclosure when they've got this broad agenda on behalf of big business? I think one thing we need to focus on as we look at this birthday anniversary, not just as the chamber's representation of big business itself, but its own institutional interest. The chamber is the primary conduit for all this corporate money coming into campaigns. The chamber has its own institutional interest in soliciting and obtaining and spending these contributions. The chamber's base of power, to a considerable extent, depends on being able to maintain the secrecy around campaign spending. So when Tom Donahue of the chamber or Bruce Jost of the chamber say they're speaking on behalf of some invented, imaginary Alice in Wonderland principle that corporations have the right to speak freely and shouldn't be intimidated by anybody knowing who's doing the speaking, they're actually saying, we need the money, and we don't want the spigot turned off when it comes to us, the Chamber of Commerce. Well, since there happen to be some non-trivial impacts of that on the rest of us, that can't be an acceptable rationale for letting big corporations buy our elections.
I don't know, a crowd of about 100 or so. Everybody has their birthday hats on because it is the Chamber's birthday.
Across the country, the Chamber of Commerce is helping promote the criminalization of the feeding of homeless people. They've been promoting that with other groups because businesses generally don't like that, which has resulted in people being arrested, specifically in Orlando, Florida, for just feeding homeless people. So that's something that they're doing here as well. That's actually resulting in people being arrested, just trying to help the poor.
As you can see by the fact that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce wants to have people arrested for feeding the homeless, who rich businessmen regard as rats, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is among the scummiest, dirtiest players, even in that sewer that is money-corrupted American politics.
Corporations are not people. Money is not speech. Corporations are not people. Money is not speech.
On the 17th of October, Occupy Monsanto paid a surprise visit to the national headquarters of both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. In front of the Republican Party, they asked, "Romney, do you eat Monsanto's genetically modified food?" In front of the Democratic Party, they said, "Obama, don't be a frankenweenie for Monsanto. Label GMO food," referring to a former campaign promise by President Obama to put labels on genetically modified foods from purveyors such as Monsanto. These are the foods that some people refer to as frankenfoods for containing genes from organisms other than the organisms the food is made out of.
We are Occupy Monsanto. We're a decentralized network of Americans and people worldwide that want genetic engineered foods to be restricted, to be controlled, to be put back in the laboratory until they're proven safe. Yeah. And in the meantime, we want organic food. We want natural food. We want food that's been handed down from generation to generation, that's tried and true. We want an environment that is not polluted with Roundup, cancer-causing Roundup. That's a weed killer. You're probably eating it. It's probably in your body right now. Staffers, I know you like junk food, but are you aware that you're eating genetically modified food? You have no way of knowing. Unless it's certified organic, you have no way of knowing if it's a genetically modified crop. And 90% of the processed foods that are passing around in the halls of Congress to keep you guys going, the energy foods, 90% of those processed foods are actually genetically modified. That means they're more likely to have pesticide contained inside the plant itself.
We're out here to ask Mitt Romney, do you eat GMOs? I know you used to work for Bain Capital, which is a company that former CEO Monsanto helped you create a while ago. So we want to know, what are your ties going to be to Monsanto if you are elected president? Will you continue to eat organic vegetables, or will you serve us all the same GMO crap that you've been serving out for years now? We don't want your GMO crap. We want organic, fresh, natural food. And we won't stand for your ties to GMO anymore. We've had enough. So you need to come out and tell us, yes, I eat organic. No, I don't eat GMOs. No, the rest of this country does not deserve to eat GMOs. And also, and Monsanto has no business heading up our FDA, our government, our USDA, none of those. We shouldn't have any corporate spokespeople speaking up for the safety and health of the food that we eat and we produce in this country. So we're here to ask Mitt Romney, what are you going to do about the revolving door between Monsanto and our federal government?
Get with the program. It's time to get with the program. I could be out here yelling it. I'm saying it nicely. Get with the program.
I'll immediately implement country of origin labeling because Americans should know where their food comes from. We'll let folks know whether their food has been genetically modified because Americans should know what they're buying. We'll let folks know whether their food has been genetically modified because Americans should know what they're buying.
There goes Tony the Franken-tiger, the Frankenstein-pushing frosted fakes of corn and other genetically modified cereals loaded with Monsanto's genetically modified grain pushed by companies like Kellogg's and General Mills. On the 22nd of October, Croatan Earth First blockaded North Carolina's Department of Environmental and Natural Resources, demanding an end to efforts on parts of the so-called Environmental Protection Agency's efforts to legalize gas fracking in North Carolina. Activists locked themselves together with arm locking pipes between themselves and bicycle locks at each end, shutting off access to the doors of the building.
Because they are underfunded. But in general, the industry is dangerous. It's not safe. It's short-term profit for people at the long-term loss of water and air quality, drinkable water, in the Piedmont area where we live.
Right. Okay. All right, perfect. Thank you so much.
Sure. We get sick and they don't
care. Poison water, poison. So again, Department of the Environment and Natural Resources in North Carolina is where we are, and they're allowing fracking to occur. We get sick and they don't care. Seven protesters locked down here using arm locks and U-locks. Those on the end here have U-locks around their necks, so they are completely chained down to the building here. Three or four police officers have shown up.
We get sick and they don't care.
Poison water, poison air.
We get sick and they don't care.
The industry is dangerous. It's not safe. It's short-term profit for people at the long-term loss of water and air quality, drinkable water, in the Piedmont area where we live.
Right. Okay. All right, perfect. Thank you so much.
Sure. We get sick and they don't
care. Poison water, poison air. So again, Department of the Environment and Natural Resources in North Carolina is where we are, and they're allowing fracking to occur. seven protesters locked down here. These are arm locks and U-locks. Those on the end here have U-locks around their necks, so they are completely chained down to the building here. Three or four police officers have shown up.
After over an hour and 15 minutes of holding the doors, with police unable to remove them, police chose to negotiate instead. Allowing the activists to unlock from the civil disobedience and leave without being arrested. Earth First staged this blockade because the Department of Environment and Natural Resources in North Carolina has been working with the newly formed Mining and Energy Commission to legalize gas fracking. The Mining and Energy Commission includes several members who are closely linked to the oil and gas industry. Ray Covington, a partner at North Carolina Oil and Gas, who profits financially from an increase in leased lands for fracking. It includes Chairman Jim Womack, a Lee County commissioner and an oil industry supporter, who claimed at a DENR public meeting that you are more likely to be hit by a meteor than have water contaminated by fracking, and Charles Holbrook, a former employee of Chevron Oil. Someone should ask Chairman Jim Womack how many of the people who can set their water on fire because natural gas and fracking is leaked into their wells have been hit by meteors. One of the Earth First activists said, quote, "Having people who support and benefit from oil and gas extraction on a regulatory commission is like a fox guarding the hen house." In Texas, TransCanada has been attempting to build the southern leg of the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline, only to run into a blockade of the route, forcing them to attempt to build the pipeline around tree sitters sitting in trees in a blockade that, as of today, the 23rd of October, has been in place for an entire month. The tree sitters took to the trees on the 24th of September. As of the 23rd of October, nothing that the police or TransCanada's goons have done has been able to remove the tree sitters, who have now been blockading construction of the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline's southern leg in Texas for a full month. Mother Earth will show a darker sign and take a toll. Animal rights activists return to the home of Dana Herr Senior Vice President Jonathan Graham. This time around, one of the neighbors menaced the protesters with a red laser. Nobody could tell whether it was a harmless laser pointer or a lethal sniper rifle.
Jonathan T. Graham! We are back! Defending our rights today and tomorrow is here because you are the Senior Vice President of Dana Herr Corporation, the parent company of Beckman Coulter. You sell lab equipment to Huntington Life Sciences, a contract animal testing facility responsible for killing 500 animals every day of the week, testing products like bleach and Splenda. They don't care what they have to test because they do it by contract. They'll test whatever for whomever, even if they know it yields inconclusive results, even if they know that these things are going to go on to kill human beings. You are a part of this, Jonathan B. Graham.
Of Danaher, corporate parent of Beckman Coulter.
500 animals tortured today.
Jonathan Graham is too blamed.
500 animals tortured in China.
Jonathan Graham is too blamed.
I saw a red dot of a laser shining behind me, like from a laser-sighted weapon. I do not know if that's a laser pointer or laser sight on a weapon, but I have to assume that someone's trying to sight in on us.
Yeah, I just saw it too.
Yeah, I did too.
It was right in this area.
Coward!
Show your face! Show your face! I'm gonna play with a red dot. Come on now.
You're gonna play with a red dot. You're gonna play these games. You can go to jail.
Who's that?
You can go to jail for quite a long time. This is no joke. Come out and show your face, you coward.
Baby.
You know, you don't have to hold a real weapon in order to be charged with brandishing.
brandishing?
Yeah.
All you have to do is make someone fear it's a weapon, and you're guilty of brandishing.
I've been shot at, so when I see a laser pointer, I assume it's mounted to a weapon.
At this point, protesters switched the bullhorns over to siren mode as a punishment mode for the neighbors who'd used the red laser to menace protesters.
You want to play with your little laser pointer, your little red dot?
Idiot.
You shoot me, it's only going to help our cause.
And keep in mind, we care about our cause. We're not just protesting noise, we're protesting torture. We're protesting what this man does to make money. This man supplies torture devices to Huntington Life Sciences. Huntington Life Sciences is the target of a global campaign to shut them down. Almost 300 companies have dropped HLS because of this campaign. We never back down. We never give in. We'll keep coming back until Jonathan P. Graham stops doing business with these torturers. Remember that, Jonathan P. Graham and neighbors. We will never back down. We'll never give in. We're coming back time and again until you issue a formal statement that you will never do business with HLS again. So until next time.
Until all are free.
We'll be back.
Just coming from that window in the house with a pointed roof.